It is almost 3 a.m., and you know what that means. Witches, goblins, and ghouls are about to be at their most powerful, and supernatural activity is about to reach its climax, if you will.
So pull out your harnesses and strap on your broomsticks, because it's time for
the Bitching Hour. Hey everyone, my name's Maggie, and today I played with 5 pit bull puppies at the MSPCA. This isn't a joke, I just had a really nice afternoon.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
It was Nancy's birthday present. Somebody got her, like, playtime with puppies. God. There were 5 rescued pit bulls at the MSPCA. They've had, like, no human interaction for their first 4 months of life, so they need to be around humans, like, playing and, like, being touched and, like, being outside and stuff. And so I literally sat in a pile of 5 pit bull puppies today.
Wow. I think I can speak for me as well as the fans and say, where was the Instagram story?
I was trying to live in the moment, and so I actually did not even have my phone on me, and I hate that I said that out loud.
That's fair. Hey everyone, I'm Mia. When I was a kid, my mom cut down a tree that we really liked in our backyard, so for several years, my brothers and I afterwards designated it as the gum stump. So we used to, like, always just put our chewed gum on the side of this one stump, and I remember being a kid and, like, pulling on my rain boots and, like, going outside, like, in, like, the rain and the snow, like, at night, to put my gum on the stump.
You sick fuck.
Why? I don't know if my mom knew or, like, eventually found it, but...
Oh my god. Why?
Gum stump. I'm honestly about to show up to that house now with some chewed gum. And...
I got in trouble for just peeling the bark off of a tree.
Like, I used to piss on everything. Like, yeah.
Well, all right. So, on this week's episode, we are getting very literal with this being a witch-themed show, and it's a little game that Mia came up with. So we're going to start with 5 things you could put in a pentagram to summon me. For the main brew, we're cracking open a cold one with the boys and cracking open a good book with ourselves as we discuss our favorite queer reads just in time for summer. We're wrapping up with a little bit of bitching it out because there was something that happened today that we need to discuss immediately.
We're on it.
So there you go.
Let's get started. Okay, so I think I first heard of this being done from, like, a Tumblr post that was screenshot and posted as a meme suggested to me on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
But the game is 5 things you would put in a pentagram to summon me. So we're going to do this about each other.
Mm-hmm.
And list off just 5 things that you would put if you wanted to summon Maggie or my spirit.
Perfect. So I will start. Okay. I will take this challenge.
What would you put in a pentagram to summon me?
Easy. Linguini.
Yep.
High top sneakers.
Okay.
Wingtip eyeliner. Platonic intimacy. And poems about milk. I want you to know that was so easy. Wow. I was just like, boom, boom, boom. Oh, 5 done. Ding, 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 ding.
That's amazing. And also, Elise and I did this the other day, and she had trouble on the spot thinking of things for me, and then I suggested things for me, but those are so different. I forget what I said, but they're very different than the ones that you're saying.
Interesting.
Yeah. What I would put in a pentagram to summon you includes Nancy, mayonnaise, a pool,
fuck,
your niece. Maybe don't put a baby in a pentagram, though, is my, like, little note for that. Like, maybe don't do that. And then, like, a nice cologne or something that smells good.
Wow.
Smell is really important to Maggie. It's very important to me, too, but I like smells that stink, and Maggie likes very clean smells always.
I just feel like the first 3 items were my girlfriend, mayonnaise, and a chlorinated swimming pool. Like,
honestly, with those 3 things, I feel like I could get your spirit.
Honestly, just mayonnaise would get my spirit.
Just throw some mayonnaise in a bowl, leave it out, she'll come.
Ew. Leave it out.
Baba, no. This week's brew is about gay books. So you've heard us talk a lot about gay movies. I like to read. I was an English major.
I hate reading. Just kidding.
Maggie hates reading.
I love reading.
Maggie, I think, reads more than I do now.
Yeah, but you're in school. I feel like when you have a job, you just, you can come home and work on a podcast
well,
and read.
To talk about too. But so I thought it was kind of interesting to talk about books because for me, books played such a big part actually in my kind of thinking about queerness before I'd ever dated at all, like when mm-hmm. I was pretty young.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I just wanted to talk about gay books. I mean, I think mm-hmm. this is kind of a year for gay books too, because Call Me By Your Name became so famous.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about Carol a lot and I hadn't seen Carol until this year. So,
it basically came out this year.
So it came out this year.
This really is a big year for gay books. I will say that I have kind of felt like a new spark for reading, frankly, because I'm working a 9-to-5, which has given me a lot more time to do it in the evenings. But also, I have gotten really into listening to podcasts this year. Mm-hmm. And one of the ones that I have loved is Food for Thought, which I think I mentioned before. And the four people on the show are writers. They're queer writers and are super brilliant and also have, most of them have posted, like, they published work. Mm-hmm. So, like, I've, like, found, like, new authors to get into. They're constantly talking about people. It's, like, giving me a chance to, like, you know, kind of get into, like, a new wave of queer.
Mm-hmm.
So that actually, so it, in the idea of, like, it's getting me into a new wave of queer fiction that I'm reading, I want to talk about How We Started, because I know that young adult novels and the idea of, like, young adult yes. fiction was a really big deal for us. And so yeah. let's get into that.
Okay. So I wrote up some books that I read as a teen. I think I mentioned in an earlier episode that I read that for Christmas one year, I had my parents buy me like a ton of gay books. And all of the books that I read, there was this author named David Leviathan, I think is his name. Mm-hmm. Does that sound familiar to
mm-hmm.
you? So I used to read a bunch of his books and all of them were about like a girl and her gay best friend meet a guy and they can't figure out the guy's sexuality,
mm-hmm.
Which is kind of annoying. But here's some of the names of the books. Is He or Isn't He? MRF.
Oh my god.
Boy Meets Boy. The Flip Side. Luna. Boy Girl Boy. A Tale of Two Summers. Naomi and Eli's No Kiss Liz. And Impulse.
I love that. I honestly, young adult fiction is so, it's such a good way to get into, like, so one of the things that I love about queerness is that particularly for so many people, it can be such a coming of age time. Like a lot of people do come out in their like teens to mid 20s. And that is a time when you're also like hitting puberty or like coming into your sexuality or like becoming like coming into adulthood for the first time. So it's like having an opportunity to read about like other people who are also having those like, A, I'm having like gay butterflies, but I'm also just like having butterflies about like a person because I've never like put my mouth on another person's mouth
right.
before.
Totally.
I love that.
Yeah. And like, it also just, it kind of like gave me something, like a little kind of solace. Like I went to Catholic school
mm-hmm.
and I think, you know, I was talking to several friends about this recently that I don't think that I've kind of unpacked the significance that going to Catholic school as a queer person has had on me. And I think mm-hmm. that's a pretty common narrative for a lot of people because
yeah.
Catholicism is a pretty big religion. It's a pretty dominant one. And it's one where you kind of, like, there's this tradition of forcing your kids into it.
Hashtag Met Gala.
Yeah. What's up? But I think, you know, like by the time I was in high school, there were a couple of families that were still pretty Catholic, but mm-hmm. most people, it was like religion wasn't something we took seriously. Like
right.
it was kind of laughable. But I think that I remember reading some of these books. I remember reading a lot of them in fifth and sixth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And we would have time as part of the day in school to read whatever we wanted to.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. Just like if you got your work done early or like sometimes mm-hmm. for recess or like, you know, English class or whatever.
Right.
And so I used to have time in school where I'm like, we had a religion class every day. We prayed twice a day at least, you know, like
right.
it was not great, but I had these moments where I could read these books and some of the book covers were like a little bit ambiguous. Like they'd have like a male and a female like restroom symbol on them or whatever. I think that's what MRF has on it, which is like such
oh
a lovable book title.
Oh my God. But it's, I mean like that feeling I feel like is unlike anything else. Like being taken away to that space, like whether it's like the attitude of the space that you're in, like being in a Catholic school, being in a space that's like really prohibitive, but also if you like the times when I was the most socially upset in school and I was like that was also a really important escape, was like being able to get into a book and knowing that like I no one was going to join me there, that it was like just me.
Right. And I think that I kind of, you know, like it was also a really small school, even in high school. My graduating high school class was like 110 people.
Wait, really? Mm-hmm. I never knew that.
I think our eighth grade class was like 60 kids or 70, you know, less than 100 probably. So being in a really small school too, like I kind of knew that like a queer romantic relationship probably wasn't going to happen for me because there weren't many other queer girls. Mm-hmm. So to have a book where I could get butterflies, like secondhand, like from reading someone else's romance or like their experience of their first time realizing they had a crush on, you know, a girl, like what, like a queer love story, like that secondhand kind of, what's the word I'm looking for?
Vicariously?
Yeah, like living vicariously through the books that I was reading.
Yeah.
Because for me, like in such a small school and a school that kind of made me feel like shit about having feelings like that, like it was such a special escape to have.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember any queer books that you, like, in particular that you read? Did you read any of the ones that I mentioned?
Not many. I will say, I think most of our overlap on young adult fiction was Sarah Dessen.
Yes.
Which are all straight, but so good.
So good.
Just scratch a real itch. But
I own so many of them.
I don't think we have a lot of overlap. I used to read Two Boys Kissing was, like, one of my favorite books ever. I remember when I realized that I was, like, okay, so, like, I have learned how to read, and, like, I found, like, ways that I get interested in books myself. It's, like, in middle school. And was, like, I can read whatever I want to read if I, like, check it out from the library and can understand it. So I would, like, read books that were, like, particularly as I, like, got better at, like, reading comprehension, like, I started reading books that were, like, kind of outside of my age range. Like, I remember I read Wicked when I was 12, and there's, like, a lot of sex in that book.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, like, that to me was, like, the best. Like, I loved being able to read about sex. I loved reading, even if it was, like, adult straight sex, like, I loved being, like, I'm gonna read about this, and no one can tell me that I don't have to, and, like, if I'm gonna, like, be embarrassed about having a sexual desire, like, I'm gonna do it completely on my own. And, like, it made me feel so adult, you know?
Yeah. That's really cool. I remember my mom, so my mom studied English and is a writer, and she was always trying to get me to read things that I thought of as being, like, old and stuffy.
Mm.
She was always trying to get me to read Virginia Woolf. My mom loves Virginia Woolf. But now I'm like, well, if I had read Orlando when I was, like, 14, like, she suggested, you know, that would have rocked my world.
Could you imagine?
Yeah. My mom's thesis for her master's, the paper was called Sons of Bitches.
Honestly, that's hot.
Yeah.
It works.
She killed it. Go, Mom. Happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day. Well, so we've been talking about, so just now we were just talking about reading books outside of your age range. How do you feel about reading young adult books now? Because we haven't gotten into the queer books that we love that are for adults that we're reading as adults. But how do you feel about reading young adult books now?
I mean, so I will admit that I shy away from it. Like, I know that there are some really, really amazing writers in the young adult genre who are, like, writing very queer work and trans work, and, like, it's, like, breaking a lot of boundaries that don't really, that just aren't published a lot in, like, traditional adult fiction. And so I've tapped into it a little bit, and every time I do, I'm so happy that I did. So I read They Both Die in the End. That was the most recent young adult book that I read, and it is about, it's, like, a dystopian novel where in, like, you know the day, like, at midnight on the day that you're gonna die, you get a call, like, you get a cell phone call. It's like, this is your last day to be alive. Like,
Oh my God.
And they don't tell you how you're going to die, and they don't tell you when. It's just, like, do with it what you will. And it's, so it's, like, very, very interesting. And there are these two guys, and one of them is bi and one of them is gay. And it's really sweet. And I absolutely loved
it. What age is it written for, do you think?
Probably, like, mid to late teens. That is, like, if I'm going to read a young adult book, that's typically where I want it in. Like just about to go to college range, like, in high school. But I also read the Book of Unknown Americans recently, which is also, technically, it's a young adult book, but it was really amazing. It's set in Delaware, and I'm from Delaware, so I loved that. But Yeah, and it's about basically like a neighborhood, and there are a few immigrant families who move in like into near like adjacent housing, and it's like about their experiences and like people falling in love and falling out of love, and it's really sweet. And I remember I read the whole thing and then was like, wait, this is young adult, because like this is actually like nuanced and beautiful and like what the hell. I actually think it's the common read for Mount Holyoke this year.
That's so nice. I love that.
Yeah. So what about, I mean, do you read young adult fiction now?
I haven't in a while. I really do like reading YA novels as an adult. I think that, so I studied English and I would often read young adult books. A lot of Sarah Dessen books actually, which I had read all throughout middle school and high school too. But I like to read them during college breaks, because I did so much reading. Like I was constantly reading novels, which was fun and amazing. Like, I mean, I took a class on Faulkner and we read like all like Southern Gothic lit.
Oh my God.
And it was really cool. Cause like a lot of times throughout college, there would be this huge overlap between the books that I had listed on my Goodreads for me to read, you know, books that I wanted to read for myself, and then books that I got to read and analyze and write papers about. And it really kind of expanded, you know. I kind of think about my first degree as like, I learned to do the thing that I love well. Mm-hmm. And now I'm pursuing like a professional degree for a career.
Right.
So I was fortunate to like read a lot of books and have a lot of professors who prescribed. I'm conflating with two worlds.
No.
Who assigned books that I really actually just wanted to read. But I really liked reading young adult novels because there's something kind of light about them. Even when they're about serious things, there's something that you can, like, it's like, you know how when you learn to read, then you're like, you compulsively read? Like, you can't look at a word without reading it.
Yes.
It's like, it feels like that about reading young adult novels sometimes. And it's just like your brain is picking it up without you really working. So it's just pleasurable and just leisurely, which I really appreciate.
I'm kind of going out on a limb here. It might sound weird, but like so many gay stories are so tragic and so heartbreaking. And there's something about like listening to young teenagers and like even young adults, like working through queerness, where like, I don't see the same bury your gaze situation going on the way you do in movies.
Maggie says bury, just so everyone knows.
What do you say?
Bury.
What is not a, it's not a raspberry.
I don't think I'm right.
Raspberry your gaze.
Raspberry your gaze.
So yeah, I mean like, but in young adult queer novels, there's a hope to it because like they're still young. So they go through their first heartbreak or something terrible happens to them, but like they have a whole life ahead of them. Whereas like, you know, you read Giovanni's Room and you're like, Jesus Christ, like, that's it. Like,
yeah, totally. I also, I did read a Sarah Dessen novel, I think once when I was in school and I was in a medieval lit class, which by the way, future English majors, current English majors, people who read a lot, don't be sleeping on medieval lit.
Is that Beowulf? Is Beowulf medieval lit?
No, I think medieval lit is earlier than Beowulf.
Oh.
I'm not sure.
Well,
yes,
anyways.
Yes, I think it is because Beowulf is written, I don't think Beowulf is written in Middle English.
Mm. I just thought there was some sexy swamp action going on there, so that's why I asked.
Beowulf medieval literature. Let's find out.
Well, if not Beowulf, what is medieval literature, I guess?
Like Chaucer.
Oh, and yikes.
Yeah. But here's the thing. Medieval lit is queer AF.
Why?
There's just so much going on. So, like, people think of it as, like, this dark age where, like, the right, like, everyone was, like, you know, it's, like, before the Renaissance and, like, nothing's happening and everyone just, like, eats their own shit and, like, it's awful. But actually, like, so many of those things, like, Julian of Norwich is, like, a religious fanatic. And, like, she talks about she had these, like, visions of Christ. And she's one of the earliest women writers of all time, which is already fucking cool. She had these insane visions of Christ. And he would come to her and, like, be covered in blood and stuff. And I remember, I couldn't help but see, like, it was striking because, like, Julian Norwich, I remember specifically in class, everyone's, like, talking about it. And the professor's like, you're like, what could it mean for Julian of Norwich to be seeing this vision of Christ covered in blood and blah, blah, blah. I haven't read it in a while, so I'm not giving you any more details besides saying he's covered in blood over and over again. But I was like, well, like, if you think about it, like, there's so much imagery of menstruation going on here, and so much, like women's comfort with sights of a large amount of blood, because women have to see a large amount of blood over and over throughout their lives, and there was just, like, all these allusions to, like, bleak. The feminine body. Yeah, women have to see blood. But there are all these, like, allusions to the feminine body and to, like, you know, like, women are excessive in their, like, tears and blood and, like... Mm-hmm. And I was, like, so much of it was, like, very, like secretly, like, very kind of subversive and feminist and funny. Like, Chaucer writes about, like, farting all the time. And it's fucking hysterical. Like, but I remember reading... Sarah Dessen at the time I was reading those things, and reading the two of them together was really fun.
That is weird.
Giant tangent about medieval lit.
No, but like, did it make you feel like you were like kind of on a roller coaster? Or did you feel like you were seeing
relations? No, because I remember the really hard thing about medieval lit was having to kind of like learn Middle English was like really difficult. Like having, but I really liked in high school. I really liked reading Shakespeare. And I remember a lot of
people... You were one of those.
Yeah. I didn't talk about it, but I really liked it. I remember... No, I loved it. I remember people being like, oh, it's so hard to read. It's so hard to read because people were trying to, like, translate word for word. And it's kind of like you have to, like, get the gist and let yourself read, like, 10 lines before you start to wonder what you're reading about. Right. Because, like, it's going to make sense to you and you have to, like, submerge yourself in that language. It's like... I mean, I think that's how we learn languages a lot of the time. It's like, you're drowning until you can realize you're suddenly swimming. And then you're like, oh my God, I know this. And I think that it's similar with Middle English. But I remember reading Sarah Dessen at that time was nice because it was like suddenly like really easy to understand language. Like easier than a novel I would read that's not a young adult novel.
Oh my gosh.
But no, like, once I started to read those things, like, Chaucer is really light in a similar way a lot of the times to young adult novels.
I remember, like, so I took an introduction to English literature class that was, like, my only English class in Mount Holyoke, but I took one, and the books, we didn't read anything queer in it, but I found that some of the work that we read that was, like, the most depressing and kind of, like, those you were just talking about how light things were kind of like speaking to and you felt like you got into a real rhythm with them, and I'm thinking about like I read Wit with I don't remember who that's by, with the semicolon.
I don't think I ever read that.
And it's about a woman who is dying of stage 4 ovarian cancer, and it's about her experiences like being a woman and a person in like the medical industrial complex and like how she's not treated like a person. And that was the same semester that we read The Bell Jar, which was the first time I ever read Sylvia Plath, who, hello, yes.
Hello. I remember before I read The Bell Jar, people telling me that it was like Catcher in the Rye for girls.
I don't agree with that at all.
I don't either.
I don't, honestly, because like...
I do kind of get annoyed with both of them in that book, in both those books, where I'm just like... Yeah.
Oh, man.
Everyone's lousy. Everyone around you sucks. I know.
I don't agree with that because I feel like The Catcher in the Rye is really all about, like, everyone around me is so terrible. And The Bell Jar is really about, like, I'm so terrible. And to me, I'm like, so, like, it's not a, like, I guess it is a girl version of Catcher in the Rye, but also,
right,
like,
we internalize it.
Right.
Like, women do that. Wow, yikes.
But sometimes it's books like that that have also been really, like, that semester was also really formative for my queerness in terms of, like, how I felt about myself and how I was thinking about my gender identity and my mental health. And, like, so I associate The Bell Jar as a very gay book, even though it's not gay.
Yeah.
And, like, I think the first line is, like, it was a queer summer night. Not in the fun way. Like, in the... Yeah.
Right. Well, should we talk about some grown-up books?
Yeah. I'm a grown-up.
So I've been actually doing some... So I love Goodreads. Goodreads is my favorite social media.
How do you stick with it? I have tried and tried. I, like, restart it, and I'll start doing it, and then I'm like, I can't. I forget. When I finish a book, I forget to do anything.
I don't know. So I have a friend from high... We were friends in high school. We met on MySpace. She lived in New York, and she has a Goodreads where she writes, like, actual reviews of books. Not, like, in a pretentious way where she, like, uses weird fucking food critic language to talk about a book.
Not like aggressive critique.
But it's just like, oh, I really liked this book. I want to read more books like this. These are the things that I found enjoyable about this book. Like, really simple, but kind of like for her own archives. of like, oh yeah, this is what I liked about that book.
Cool.
And it's really cool because then I often will go to her Goodreads page to find suggestions or like, oh, maybe I want a book like this, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And she reads a lot too, which is cool.
Is that why you do? So do you write reviews
on Goodreads? I just started writing reviews on Goodreads.
For the same reason? Like you want to be able to go back and...
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I always would rate books, but I just started writing reviews. I just read 2 books. So my goal for this year is to read 10 books, which in previous years I read like 20 or wanted to read 20 or whatever. But I think that being in school, it's kind of hard to read.
Yeah, you're reading about like really annoying shit, like Latin names for diseases. Yeah. I think you're good.
Yeah, like... it's hard to read like medical surgical textbooks and then find time to read for pleasure. But I've been trying to read every time I'm on public transportation. And just kind of like, that's a pretty good amount of time.
Yeah. So, it's a lot of your day.
Frustratingly enough, it is a lot of my day.
Yeah.
I've decided to read 10 books and I'm trying to read my shelf on Goodreads for these 10 books is called 20 Gay Teen.
Yay.
So I'm trying to read 10 gay books this year. So I started off with a memoir called Darling Days, which I read very quickly. Mm-hmm. It's Io Tillett Wright's memoir, and I won't go into too much detail about it. He's like a really cool writer and activist and actor and photographer, and he's been on the show Catfish. But you can follow him on social media. I'll like link to him, but my Goodreads account, like you could find me on there if you want to read about the book.
Mm-hmm.
I
liked it. I've started it. Like
started it.
I'm like a couple. I'm not halfway through it. I'm maybe like a quarter of the way through it, but it is definitely giving me Glass Castle, but like mm-hmm. queer vibes. Mm-hmm. So I'm into that. But so yeah. far.
And it's interesting too. Like one thing that I remember writing about it on Goodreads is that it's like an experience that's so totally different than mine, despite falling under a lot of the same umbrella term identifiers, which is really empowering to read. You know, like I went to a women's college. I'm like seek out people who are like me because that's how human beings function a lot of the time.
Right.
You know, like obviously I have a lot of friends whose experiences are different than me. I have a lot of friends who are not queer.
Right.
But it's really cool and powerful. And I think that it's important for me, especially as like a cis woman, as a white woman, to read like different kinds of experiences of mm-hmm. queerness. And I think that reading memoirs is a really powerful way to do that. And I'm hoping to find more different mm-hmm. memoirs of people, especially like historical memoirs of queer people.
Wait, so is your shelf for 20 Gay Teen set, or are you like creating it as you go?
I think right now I have like 12 books on there.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So like I there's more than 10 books and I'm kind of like picking through them, but I'm trying to create like a bookshelf of gay mm-hmm. books, and then I'm trying to read 10 for the year.
You also just read Fun Home, right?
I did just read Fun Home, and I read Fun Home really quickly.
Yes. Alison Bechdel, you really can get going on her stuff. Yes.
Like, and also, like, graphic novels are just so fun. Like, you just can't put it down. And it was beautiful. I think in my review of that book, I wrote, like, oh, I get it. I get why so many people are like, what do you mean you haven't read this yet?
Yeah.
And now I'm like, I want to get my hands on every Alison Bechdel book.
Honestly, Are You My Mother changed my life. My mom is currently reading it. My mother has my copy of Are You My Mother? And when I get it back from my mother, you should really get into that. I'm going to give it to my mommy, Mia. Yikes. But it's so fucking good. Oh my God. Really, Alison Bechdel is like...
is unbelievable.
She is like truly one of like my... like, oh yeah, I could live to be in my 50s.
Yeah, it's like, that's really important.
Yeah.
You know, it's also like, it's really important because she really digs up a lot of heavy, dark shit, but the book is not heavy and dark.
Mm-hmm.
The book is...
Oh, I think it is heavy and dark.
I think it is, but I think that there's, like, it's not just like, womp womp.
That's true. Yeah.
Like, I feel like it's heavy and dark because it's, like, raw and it's real. It's not heavy and dark for the sake of shock factor or, mm-hmm. or like, just like, oh, everything sucks, everything's so sad. It's moving. It's, like, heavy and dark because that's how people's lives are. Mm-hmm. But, like, it's about resilience to me.
It's also interesting. One of the things I find about Alison Bechdel, but I feel this way about a lot of other queer writers, is that my sense of humor and my sense of kind of processing things is very kind of like, what's the word? Like self-deprecating.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can be self-deprecating in that way. And it's not, I think there are a lot of straight people who do the same, but there's something in particular about queer women being self-deprecating about their own gender identity and their own queerness and their own, you know, like, neurotic behaviors and, like, all of the other things that, like, I associate with my own queerness, which are, like, so nice to read about because mm-hmm. it's, like, there are a lot of things that are, like, generally termed, like, women's fiction, which I'm, like, I can't, it just doesn't work, you mm-hmm. know, like, I can't really get behind it. Wow, so what's next on your list?
So I can read you guys my little list so far. So right now I'm reading Ruby Fruit Jungle.
Oh, so fun.
I rented that from the library.
So much fun.
Yeah, so that one's good. I'm not very far into it. I'm like 30 or 40 pages into it. Mm-hmm. It's a lot funnier so far than I expected it to yes. be. I think that the three books that I've read so far, so the first one is Darling Days, the second one was Fun Home, and the third one is Ruby Fruit Jungle. I think they each are so different, which yes. is really fun and has made it, it's kind of kept the momentum going for me to continue mm-hmm. reading, which is really cool.
Ruby Fruit Jungle is such a trip.
I love the name.
It is such a period piece. Like, it is, like, yeah. so and fun.
So on Goodreads, I was looking at the review, because Goodreads is cool, too. They have, like, a way for you to look at reviews without, like, hiding ones that have spoilers. Mm-hmm. People will kind of flag theirs as having spoilers in it, so you can, like, just see what people think. And I was reading a review that was actually pretty critical of the book. And it wasn't critical particularly of anything. It was just like, yeah, this book is fine, but, like, there are other better books that you could read. And
oh,
I was like,
absolutely.
Where? Give me them.
It's a little bit like watching Queer as Folk as opposed to watching, like, a better actually.
Right, it's like, okay, you'll do it.
Right. Like, it's like, okay, I'll watch it for the representation. Yeah. And it has its own, it has a moment in history. Mm-hmm. Like, it has a prominence of its time.
Yeah. But, like, well, also, you know, part of the reason I was first interested in it, and I feel like I can't speak too much to it because I haven't read a ton of the book, but I spent a summer living in Jacksonville, Florida, and I remember when I was living there, my friend's boyfriend who lived there said, oh, like, what class are you taking in the fall? He studied English as well, and I was like, oh, well, I'm taking this Faulkner class in the fall. And I remember him saying, after you spend the summer in Florida, Faulkner is going to be totally different to you. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he was like, because when you've lived in that kind of sweltering, suffocating heat, the way, because so much, like, Faulkner would have, like, fucking 2 pages straight of, like, describing a setting, mm-hmm. and it would be about humidity and, like, this, like, suffocating heat, mm-hmm. and I was like, yeah, you're right, I guess, like, I'd never, it's so, so different in the north, and so after mm-hmm. living there, like, in August, in northern Florida, like, it changed my whole perspective on reading his books and the way that he describes the South.
Are you feeling a setting, are you feeling really attached so far to the setting in Ruby Fruit Jungle?
Not really.
Oh, okay.
but it set it up to be Southern. Mm-hmm. I think that setting is kind of important when you think about queerness decades ago.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and now, frankly.
Right, yeah. Right. So I think that that's an interesting thing that I'm looking forward to see, like, what happens in that book.
But speaking of setting, actually, so I know I was talking a little bit earlier about, like, I don't, like, I really like to read things by queer authors. There's something really particular about, like, some of the, like, ways of processing things. And, but I realized, as we were talking about setting, that one of the books that was also very, very important to me over the past couple of years was Wild by Cheryl Strayed, which is, like, not that well written, to be honest, but I loved it, and I've read it multiple times.
You know who else loved it?
Who?
Reese Witherspoon.
Okay. Listen.
Honestly, a good movie.
Fuck you.
Honestly, a good movie.
It is a great movie. The book is better. There's something about, like, her experiencing those different settings and, like, how, like, feeling like you're in them, but also feeling, like, for me, it's less about, like, oh, I want to feel the distinct stickiness, or I want to feel the, like, whatever it is. Like, for me, it's like she's so alone out mm-hmm. in the wilderness, and, like, I love that feeling of, like, because even if you're not out there, like, I know those feelings where I'm just like, I feel like I'm completely alone, like mm-hmm. and it's like there's, but, like, that idea of, like, connecting, like, I feel like that to me is, like, what I think of when I think of being, like, a little kid and feeling, like, out of this world, like mm-hmm. connecting to a book, like, that's how I still get it now, is, like, when, like, the details of the setting and the, like, that is, like, so, like, richly developed. Mm-hmm. Like, so I really don't feel like I am where I am, which yeah. is nice. You got to do it.
Yeah. Like, it really is so nice. I definitely felt that way about Darling Days. Mm-hmm. Oh, so my, so the books on my to read shelf on on Goodreads for #2018 include Fun Home, Darling Days, Ruby Fruit Jungle, Stonebutch Blues, Essential Dykes to Watch Out For, Are You My Mother, Fried Green Tomatoes at the Whistle Stop Cafe, Carol, Amatore's Restaurant, which is, I think, a collection of short stories, Bastard Out of Carolina. So the person who wrote the review of Ruby Fruit Jungle and said, like, there's better things to read, suggested Bastard Out of Carolina. And then the last book is called The Passion, and I don't totally know what that is either. But
sounds ominous and Catholic, to be quite honest.
That's what I'm looking for. So that's my to-read shelf. And it's honestly been really nice because also, like, another aspect of being in school is that I'm not dating a lot. Mm-hmm. And so it's been really nice to read stories about people having queer relationships or dating or, like, you know, to it feels similar to having that transplant back to sixth grade when I'm, like, uncomfortable and, like, I'm imagining, you know, I'm trying to, like, convince myself it gets better. Yikes. Like, maybe someday I'll go on a date with a girl, you know, and
oh god,
and I'm in my school uniform. Okay, I want to ask Maggie some tough questions.
Oh.
So, what is different for you in the way that you relate to gay books compared to movies?
Oh, well, here we go. I think, so I have read a couple books very recently. I just went through a period where I was just like, boom, 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 like all in a row. And they were most of Alison Bechdel's work. And then I got into the, again, the guys from Food for Thought. So two of them in particular. So Joseph Osmondson has a book right now that's come out that's called Inside Out. And Tommy Pico has a book called IRL, like as in real life. And both of them are, so
are they fiction?
Sort of. So like Joe Osmondson's book is definitely fiction. It's a little bit more poetic in nature. Like I wouldn't call it, it's just like, it definitely has a flow to it. It's not like traditional prose. And it's about an abusive relationship. Like it was about his abusive relationship with his ex-boyfriend and how they treated each other and what emotional abuse looks like and all of the different things that kind of went into the way they behaved, which I really liked. And then IRL is actually an epic poem, which is so cool. So
I love that.
It's so good. And like, so those to me are so different than like the movies I've been watching and the TV I've been watching. Like they're, for me, the sign that, like, a book is really getting me is if I, like, do that thing where I'm reading it and then I, like, put the book down on my chest and, like, close my eyes for a second. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, my God. And then I, like, start reading again.
Yeah.
I did that with Call Me By Your Name, and I know a lot of people hated that book, and I understand why, but there were some moments where I was like, oh, this self-loathing is so relatable. Oh.
Yeah, when you're kind of just, like, basking in that.
And I just feel like I get that in movies. I really do, but I feel like it's a lot fewer and farther between, and it's a different thing to access. Like, I feel like with movies, I feel a kind of like that like yearning feeling when you watch something queer and it just kind of like makes your heart hurt a little bit, but it goes away. Whereas like with books, like there's a possibility to it.
It like lingers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, so something that I have been wondering about since we had our movie episode, or not our movie episode, our intergenerational queer love episode. So you read Call Me By Your Name after you saw the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think, so I haven't read Call Me By Your Name, but I was thinking about how I really didn't like Armie Hammer's casting. Like, I didn't like that he was that role. I would not have cast him as that role. Like, yeah, the dude's hunky, but he's like a boring Ken doll. You know, like, it could have been better.
But you have to read the book, though, because I still kind of feel that way, but I'm also getting, I'm like, oh, that was a perfect choice.
Yeah.
Because,
well, that's what I was going to ask, is like, how do you feel about the casting choices having read the book?
For that particular movie, I actually feel fine with it, because, like, actually really good about it, because, so Elio's character is, like, the book is just his inner thoughts. Mm-hmm. Like, you're getting an entire novel, which is like his stream of consciousness about like his like unsuredness and his like love and his longing and his yearning, but also his self-loathing and his hatred and his like just like he's so self-conscious. And like you realize like a couple, like I say, like after like the first section, you're like, oh right, like I'm reading a book that is from the position of a 17-year-old who's like having like while it's not his first sexual experience, it's a, like having a first major sexual experience for him.
Right. And like a really formative one.
Exactly. And so one thing I kind of respect about the Armie Hammer choice is that I like that he's a Ken doll because it's not about him, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, if he had, if the actor was, like, so much of a personality that, like, that Oliver became, you know, right. Oliver is almost supposed to, he's not a blank slate. Like, he obviously is someone, but, like, I only want to know Oliver through Elio. I don't want to know Oliver on his own. Mm-hmm. And, like, Armie Hammer's a perfect person to do that because he's boring.
Yeah. No, that's amazing. And that's like a really...
I haven't read Carol though, so...
Yeah, I'm definitely excited to read that. It's also... So another thing, another comment that I want to make about my reading list is how special it's been to connect with my queer friends about books. Mm-hmm. So many of the books that I've been reading have been lent to me by queer people. Like, mm-hmm. I lent Maggie Darling Days as soon as I finished it. Maggie lent me Fun Home. Mm-hmm. A friend from nursing school told me that she would lend me Carol. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like it really allows you to kind of like borrow that experience and then have it to talk about, and it's really sweet.
Having queer books that like go around our circles is something that is so special and is like so meaningful. Like when I think about having a niece, like I think about what it was like for me to be like a little kid like toddling around my like aunts and uncles' apartments and like finding gay books or sexy mm-hmm. books or things that were just really different than what I had seen before, and mm-hmm. like being able to kind of like quietly, like, nobody knows I'm reading this and I'm just gonna like go somewhere else for a while. Like, I like the idea that my place could be a place for that too, you know, for that kind of growth. I have a book that's so I pre-ordered Tommy Pico's new book, which is Junk, that's coming. It's on its way. It said it shipped. Don't know. But yeah, besides that book that's on its way, I'm at a little bit of a lull. Like, I'm ready for like a new big list. Maybe it's time for the listeners to chime in. Like, yes. What are you guys reading? What have you read? If you were listening to this episode and thought to yourself, like, those are awful, you could be reading so much better stuff, just tell us.
I can't believe they didn't talk about this book.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. I would love to keep adding. And I had this thought recently when I was like, yeah, I'm making this like list of like, I want to read 10 books this year and I want to try to make them all gay. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what if I just never read a book that isn't gay ever again?
Honestly, you can do that. You have the power to never engage with straightness in that way again.
Wow. I don't want to see or be seen by straight people.
That's what Mia says when we go out clubbing sometimes.
That's a setting you can have on your OkCupid. That's where I got it from.
So do you have any, like, what are some of your final thoughts? Are there any, like, questions that you feel like we need to hit?
Well, so, like, talking about the ways that, like, I kind of, like, created these little homes in these books and stuff. Like, I just am, like, looking forward to the kind of clarity I have about myself and, like, the, you talked about Elio's mm-hmm. unsuredness. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, just at a place where I'm, like, pretty sure of who I am and what I want and what I like, you know, like, diving into queer literature and carving out, you know, when I was like 12 and 13 and I was buying all these books, I was buying it almost compulsively. Like, I just needed to read it. I just, like...
And babysit, buy a gay book. Babysit, buy a gay book.
Yeah. Yeah. And now it's like, no, I'm seeking out this kind of thing. And I think that's a marked difference for me. And so I'm just really looking forward to that shift in perspective going into books. Mm-hmm. I think that they mean more to me when I'm like, no, I need this.
Yeah.
And so, and it's really special. I think, you know, I talked in the healthcare episode about sometimes having to feel like I have to swallow parts of myself to kind of get the job done and like focus mm-hmm. on school and do what I've got to do. And I think that maintaining a going list of gay books is a kind of way to never really do that all the time.
The other thing I'll say to close out is that is so, like, allowing that feeling to drive the decisions you make about the literature that you're reading and, like, what you're consuming is a totally valid thing to do. And for me, it's not so much a justification as it is, like, a way to not get down on myself on being like, oh, well, I haven't read all of the classics, you know, mm-hmm. like, or I haven't read, like, first off, anybody could do that, but, like, mm-hmm. and we all know that, like, in, like, in a lot of the circles we run in, like, that kind of academic elitism, like, continues to perpetuate itself. And, like, you know, I'm not gonna pretend like I'm not ever guilty of that, but the, like, being able to say, like, no, actually, like, Stone Butch Blues is on my canon list. Like, it's important to me. Right. Like, and in, like, it doesn't mean you have to turn around and be like, fuck you, why haven't you read it? But it's, like, not having to feel bad about, like, I'm not reading something meaningful because I'm reading queer work. Because, like, it's, like, people for centuries were not validating queer work.
Right.
Like, it's, there's never been a, like, a hugely long history of, like, gay stuff getting any of the recognition it deserves. So, right. like, read it anyways and, like, fuck that.
Mm-hmm.
Which right. is, it's nice. Sometimes I have to remind myself of that.
I'm doing this for Hayley Kyoko and Kehlani. I added a page to our website called Bitchin' Bibliography.
You guys have to check it out. It's so thorough.
Basically, anything that we've referenced on the show, and we'll update it more to include the books that we've spoken about tonight. Music, books, TV shows, movies, artists, writers, websites, mm-hmm. events, places. Mm-hmm. I will also add a link to my Goodreads. Feel free to add me and check out my 2018 shelf and send us your suggestions and books and things like that that you want us to check out.
Yeah, absolutely. So there we go. All right. So as usual, Mia and I have found things to be mad about.
We love to complain.
I love complaining because I'm a woman.
Nag, nag, nag.
So, in case any of you haven't heard it, there is a new single out that's called Girls by Rita Ora, and it features BB Rexha.
That's how I would.
I think that's how you pronounce it. Charlie XCX and Cardi B. And honestly, it is a banger. It is so much fun. But the lyrics are, like, in some ways super fun and cool and fluid and being like, you know what? I'm going to live my life. And, like, if I want to hook up with girls, I will. And, like, fuck you. And I'm all down for that. But the other half of it is, like, I just hate men. And so I'm going to get back at you by, like, hooking up with a girl. And, like, I'm going to get drunk so that I can kiss a girl. And, like, you know, like, I'm going to make a lipstick lesbian joke. And it's like, so we're conflicted.
We're gonna bitch. So I'm gonna read Hayley Kiyoko's response to it.
Yes, Hayley Kiyoko was more than conflicted.
She said, it's important for us artists to use our platforms to move the cultural needle forward, not backwards. There is a new song that came out today featuring a handful of well-known pop artists that has me overwhelmed with thoughts. I literally have a knot in my stomach right now. To be clear, I fully support other artists who freely express themselves and applaud male and female artists who are opening up more and more about their sexual identities. But every so often there come certain songs with messaging that is just downright tone deaf, which does more than harm than good for the LGBTQ+ community. A song like this just fuels the male gaze while marginalizing the idea of women loving women. I know this wasn't the intention of the artists of the song, but it's the lack of consideration behind these lyrics that really get me. I don't need to drink wine to kiss girls. I've loved women my entire life. This type of message is dangerous because it completely belittles and invalidates the very pure feelings of an entire community. I feel I have a responsibility to protect that whenever possible. We can and should do better.
Why did you include, like, I've loved women forever? Like, you don't need to, like, those things don't have to be, like, synonymous.
That actually is something that bothered me about it, too, is, like, someone who didn't think that they'd ever would be someone who thought they were straight until they were 40 is not any less gay than you.
Right. It's like, so it's like, I also have problems with this song and the messaging behind it, but why did you rely on that? You know, and one of the things I said to Mia today is that I feel like there are times that the idea of, oh, well, everybody's just sexually fluid. Like, we're all fluid now. We're all just fluid is actually can be kind of weaponized against people or can be used in a way which is like, it invalidates the lived experiences of people who are bisexual or lesbian in particular. Like, I'm speaking about, like, women loving women communities. And frankly, I think it happens to bisexual women a shit ton.
Mm-hmm.
But this idea that oh, we're all fluid, so get over it. It doesn't matter anymore.
You're meaning
but
from
like,
the perspective of people writing the song.
From people not writing Hayley the song. Kyoko. No, not Hayley Kyoko. I'm just, yeah, so like people who are appealing to mainstream culture and appealing to mainstream politics and have really like very comfortably worked their way into like a public space. And even like, you know, this has nothing to do with these individual artists. You know, like I absolutely love, especially Cardi B. Like Although
Cardi B has said some pretty transphobic things and has had some, you know, moments of not being particularly sensitive. But that's the thing that makes me really conflicted. Also, is that Cardi B has talked openly about having sex with women many times previously.
But that's, so that's the thing, though, like, is that, like, but when...
Who is Hayley Kiyoko to be like, well, you're not queer?
But what's frustrating to me is that, like, do what you're going to do for you and support what you're going to support, but recognize, like, your lived reality and what kind of space it takes up when you decide that you're going to be... Because you know that this is going to be a banger. Right. You know people are going to listen to this.
And that's something that Maggie and I were texting about this earlier. And that's something that I was thinking about, too, when I was thinking about, like, if I were Hayley Kiyoko and I fucking worked my ass off to develop this to never hide, to always be of like a beacon of hope to young queer women.
And refuse to make music videos where she's not pursuing women. Like, she's talked about,
right,
like, she's having to defend herself.
She directs all of her music videos.
Right.
It's, like, constantly present. Like, and I would be so pissed if, I mean, like, Charlie XCX literally has a song called Boys.
I know.
Not that people can't have songs called Boys and called Girls, because, like, hell yeah. But it does feel a bit like, oh, okay, the future is queer. Like, this is a thing that's, like, 2018 is a hashtag. That's a thing that's happening right now. Let me just hop on that and profit off of it.
And it's also, it's not even just the future is queer. It's the future is female. Like, right. That is really what we're talking about. Because it's, like, and that's where I lose my ability to get on board. Is because
that's where I lose my shit.
It's where I lose my fucking cool. It's like, you know, I love this. I love exploration of fluidity. I love the whole thing. I also love the fact that, like, this to me seems like such it's a reclaiming of I don't even want to say her name, Lena Dunham. I feel like it is like a reclaiming of the title of her show, which is now, thankfully, I will associate it with this song. But also it's like, I Kissed a Girl by Katy Perry sucked. But, like, this was such a beautiful, like, change from that because it was so different.
It still feels like it's doing the same thing to me.
Really?
Because I'm drinking and now I'm going to kiss a girl.
But
I'm like, oh.
But they also, there are, like, lines in there where they're like, oh, like, I'm 50-50.
But is
and,
Riora,
like,
has she ever talked about being queer?
I don't know. Maybe. But, like, yeah. Like, I'm not gonna come at her and...
That's the thing. It's like, I feel like that's a problem with what Hayley Kiyoko is doing, is that it's like...
Right.
She, which I think is why it's important that she said in her post, like, it's great that people are talking more and more about their sexual identities.
Right.
Because also coming out is a very personal thing.
Right.
Whether you're a celebrity or not, whether you're a musician or not, just because Hayley Kiyoko had the resources and the support and whatever to make those kinds of decisions, that was like, for me, I'm not doing this unless I get to have my queerness be part of everything that I'm doing. For other people, it may not be that way. So... Who knows? Like, exactly.
Right.
Like you're saying, like, who knows? But, you know, it does feel a little bit like, okay, wait.
Exactly.
If you're not going to talk about it besides making a song that's going to make you money off of it.
Right.
Are you doing the work?
Also, like, let's be really clear. The way that you're singing this song is about other hyper beautiful, hyper femme women. That's awesome.
Right.
I'm about the whole thing.
Femmes are great.
However, you know that, like, I think people overuse the term male gaze all the time, so I don't even really want to touch it, but even just the idea of, like, being fluid is in right now, and profitable, and, like, being a woman is, like, there are ways to, like, there, we're not going to pretend like that consumption isn't something that, like, is a big part of the music industry, is, like, consumption of, like, women's sexuality, so, mm-hmm. like, there's a part of me which is like, you guys are on a really big stage and you deserve a way to, like, be fluid and stuff. But, like, you also know that, like, we are going to get think piece after think piece written by fucking men who are like,
right.
This is the summer of, like, women's fluidity. And, like the future is, like, the ladies are for the ladies. Like, where are the men? And it's like, but then it's going to move on. And, like, there are, like...
Right.
It's just frustrating because it's like, it's not sexy. It's not like, why is it that, like, gay women are only gay in the summer? It's like Demi Lovato. It's cool for the summer. Like,
yeah.
You guys, like, I'm so gay in the winter.
I want a gay winter banger.
Yeah, what the fuck, y'all?
Well, we bitched.
We bitched, and honestly, we got nowhere because I'm still conflicted.
I'm still conflicted.
And
it's
still
a banger.
It's a banger. And I love ladies, and I love ladies
who
love
ladies.
I love loving ladies.
I love kissing.
I love wine,
honestly. I do also like wine. So check the video out. Well, it's a lyric video.
I'm very curious to see what that video is going to be.
Yeah. So listen to that song. Let us know what you think. Let us know what your feelings are. Haley Kinkle, yeah. Feel free to message me anytime to talk about it. We don't need wine, you're right. Anytime. Mm-hmm. So, thanks for tuning in this week. If you have any comments, be sure to leave them on iTunes, Instagram, or Twitter. We'd love to hear from you. Unfortunately, we don't have an episode for next week. Maggie and I are going to our college reunion.
Woo!
The air is going to be radio silent, and we're probably going to be very drunk.
What are you talking about?
We'll be back on May 28th with an episode that's going to be a little bit of everything. A smorgasbord, if you will. See you then.
Bye. Have fun. Don't miss us.
Psych!